This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Welcome to the Fun Kids Science Weekly. This is your final stop on the expressway to being an absolute qualified, certified genius, right? This is the show where we talk about all the amazing, the dangerous, and the deadly stuff that's going on in the universe all around us. Now, my name's Dan. Hello. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. Today, we're learning about the most deadly island on this planet. We'll also chat to a man who taught himself to become a science expert and now is using that smartness to help teach other people. You can be one of those in just a sec. And in a little bit, we'll find some of the unique ways that this podcast can help you out. It's not just about science as well. The first, right, so it's like a month until Christmas now. And if you're panicking about your letter getting to the North Pole on time, if you're wondering how the big red man is going to fit all your presents onto the sleigh, maybe you're scared that there's no way the reindeer can possibly be strong enough to lug it all around the globe, right? Calm down. I've got something to ease your fears.
Santa Maury's Science of Christmas.
Hello, Santa Maury here. You know, the one in charge of all the science and technology here at the North Pole. Now, I know many of you have seen images of Santa's sleigh. Some of you may have even had a go at designing your own version. But I'm going to let you in on some of the secrets. With his sleigh, Santa flies to every single house across the globe in a single night. That's got to be one pretty aerodynamic toboggan, right? Well, for many years it wasn't. The reindeer had to work extremely hard to pull the original clunky sleigh through the air. Then one day, some clever elves worked out that air resistance, or should I say drag, on the sleigh was pretty high. When something like an aeroplane, or a sleigh, moves through the air, every part of it generates drag. This makes it harder for it to travel forward. It's the job of designers, or in my case, elves, to make sure that the shape of the vehicle generates as little drag as possible. And luckily, elves are brilliant designers. And a good job too. The most aerodynamic shape in the world is a drop of rain when it's falling. The front is a very big semicircle, and then it smoothly forms a point. You'll see the same type of shape on an aircraft wing. The front is a semicircle, and then the wing tapers into a very aerodynamic form, so the airflow nicely follows the shape. On the other hand, shapes that are jagged or non-streamlined create a lot of drag, since they cause the flow of air to change suddenly and make the air push up against the object. This is why airplanes and cars are often curved and smooth, not flat-fronted like a house. Because the less drag a vehicle creates, the less power you're going to need to move. Now, over the last year, the elves have been playing around with all of this to try and create a more modern design for Santa's sleigh. We experimented with teardrop shapes, creating a more smooth and sleek sleigh that looks more like a sports car than a chair on skis. All those smooth lines eliminated 90% of the drag created by the old sleigh design, allowing air to flow more smoothly around. In fact, the new sleigh is so aerodynamically sound, it can handle supersonic speeds. We also thought of a covered cockpit, so that Santa doesn't get cold while travelling through the chilly stratosphere, as well as a stealth feature, ensuring that even the most eagle-eyed kids can't see him coming. But Santa didn't like any of these ideas. He's still quite attached to the old sleigh, so we've had a go at adapting it to help him get around a little quicker. But I'll tell you about that next time.
Santa Maury's Science of Christmas, with support from the Institute of Physics, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and the Institution of Engineering and Technology. Find out more at funkidslive.com/Christmas.
Yeah, it's not just on the website as well. You can find out loads more about the science of Christmas for free on your phone or tablet. Get to iTunes and have a listen through the Fun Kids app. So yes, welcome along. This is the show where we learn about all the amazing sciencey stuff that's all around you in the universe, right? But apparently, that's not all we do. Listen to this. It's from Jemina, from Argentina. She says, I love your podcasts. They help me a lot to practice listening. They're also fun and they're interesting because she studies English translation. That means, Jemina, you're understanding English, a whole language, based on what I'm saying. You know, I feel pretty powerful right now. I'm also a little bit worried that your conversational English is just going to be sciencey, Jemina. So you'll spend all your time at parties talking about deadly animals, exploding planets, and deathly diseases. Still, I guess at least you won't be boring. Thanks, Jemina, so much for getting in touch. I hope we're being useful a little bit. Remember, if you want a shout-out on the show, you can send a message to my page. We're over at funkidslive.com. Also, if you leave a review, over on the iTunes podcast store with your name. Drop us 5 stars on there as well. I'll know you're there. I'll know you're loving it. It's dead easy. Just open up your phone or your tablet, get to the iTunes podcast store and search for the Fun Kids Science Weekly. It is the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, our special guest on the show today is the author of a brand new book, which is trying to help you become like a science genius. It's called How to Be a Scientist. Steve Mould, hello.
Hello.
Now, Steve, you're not a doctor or a professor, are you? You're just a self-confessed science nerd, right?
That's right. I studied science at university. I studied physics, which is my favourite of the science subjects. But that doesn't make me a doctor. Not quite. I'm an enthusiast.
And we see you on the telly, and we can see you in books, and we can see you on the stage as well. How would I start out, though, if I wanted to take my love for science all around the world?
Well, if you've got a love for science, the thing is just to be inquisitive, experiment, and look at the world around you. Try and explain stuff. Try and experiment with things. That's part of what the book's about. It's about experiments that you can do that show the inquisitive nature of being a scientist that will spark your interest and get you playing and having fun with it.
So talk to me more about the book. It's How to Be a Scientist. How do I become a scientist then? What can the book teach me?
So it's full of experiments. That's the main thing. And through the experiments, you're learning about whatever the subject is. But you're also learning about what scientists do and what scientists are like and the way they think. So sometimes it's about building something. Maybe you're going to build a sundial. And scientists do that. You know, they build equipment that helps them to measure the world and things like that. Or maybe, like an engineer, you're going to build the very best paper airplane you could possibly build. But it covers all sorts of stuff. It's got chemistry in there, got biology, got physics, got forces, you know, all this sort of stuff. So yeah, every topic is covered.
Now, we see loads of trial and error on your YouTube channel, Steve, which is one of your favourite ways that you get out a load of the experiments that you do. I want to kind of pick your brain over some of them that you've done that I've been looking at. What is the science behind a twitching eye?
I've got a twitching eye because I got really, really tired after my son was born. He's 3 months old now. And it's this weird thing that when you get tired, your eye starts to twitch. And it's to do with the way signaling happens in your brain. So you've got muscles, and your muscles are controlled by your brain. But there needs to be a way for those signals to get from your brain to your muscles. And that's through something called neurons. Neurons are these really, really long cells, and they run all the way from your brain to your muscles, a bit like wires in a computer or something like that. And when you get tired, the receptors on your muscles get a bit oversensitive, and we don't really know why, but it causes your eye to twitch even when no signal is coming from your brain.
Also on the channel, as well as doing experiments yourself in your lab and at home, you go on adventures. And I was on there earlier looking at your trip to a synergy truck.
Yes.
This looks like the most fun kind of way of getting food ever. Tell me more about this.
Firstly, I really like food, so that was good too. This is about green technology. So there's loads of green tech that people are coming up with that means we don't have to burn as many fossil fuels, we don't make as much carbon dioxide, which is the greenhouse gas, which is what we're worried about with global warming. So it was this idea to take all of those different technologies and put them in one place and say, look, you can make a food truck which is generating its own energy without making carbon dioxide, without making a greenhouse gas. Whenever anyone walked up to the food truck, their footsteps were generating electricity that you could use to charge your phone or something like that. There were solar panels on the roof. There was this light that is, you generate the light by lifting up a sandbag, and then as the sandbag slowly descends, it turns all these cogs and it shines this light. That was so cool. There were so many things.
And as I say, it's not just in the book and on your YouTube channel. You've been doing science for ages. You must have learned so much. What's your favourite thing that you've found out about the science that's all around us every day?
Oh, gosh, that's a very hard question. Why don't I tell you something that I learned recently? I've been writing a new book, which is about microbes. And so I've been researching microbes. I found out the most amazing thing about the plague. So, you know, the plague is this horrible disease that it's still around, but there was a big plague in the Black Death, they called it. That was in Europe. But the plague is passed from rats to humans via fleas. So what happens is a flea will, fleas suck blood, right? A flea lands on a rat, for example, and the bacteria that causes the plague ends up in the flea. And then the flea flies over to a human, sucks the blood of the human, and that's how the bacteria gets into the human. But the coolest thing is that when the bacteria is in the flea, and it's, you know, bacteria, they multiply, right? So you've got one bacteria, it splits into two, that splits into four, that splits into eight, and you get this big mass of bacteria. But when it's in the flea, it all clumps together and forms this little plug that sits inside the flea's stomach. And so the flea is really, really hungry because there's this thing blocking food getting to its stomach. So when it flies onto a human, it tries to drink blood because it's hungry. But because there's this blockage, the flea throws up back into the human. And that's how the bacteria gets into the human, because the bacteria has forced the flea to throw up.
I didn't think the idea of the Black Death could actually get more gross and rank. Let me point you towards something, Steve. On this show, the Fun Kids Science Weekly, every week we do a feature called Dangerous Dan, where we talk about the most deadly things in our universe. We've done chemicals, we've done places, animals, and we did the Black Plague very early on. So you can go and find that while you write your book. There you go.
Right.
Also, you're taking science to the stage, aren't you? You're going on tour all around the country. Tell us a bit more about that.
That's a comedy show. It's called Festival of the Spoken Nerd, and it's a comedy show about science. So there's experiments, there's interactive stuff, there's music, there's maths as well. It's called Festival of the Spoken Nerd. It's a comedy show about science and maths. It's full of experiments and interactive stuff, and songs, got comedy songs in there about science. It's really fun to do that show, and we get kids along now and again, so come along.
Brilliant. Good luck with it. Thank you so much for coming on the Fun Kids Science Weekly, Steve. The book is called How to Be a Scientist, and you can pick it up right now. Now, we'll find out where all the stuff that you put in the toilet finally ends up in just a sec. First, it's for something less disgusting, but equally as sensible to avoid. It's this week's Dangerous Dan. This is where we look at the most evil, mean and deadly things in the whole universe. And today, we're learning about a whole island. Because just off the coast of Brazil, in South America, lies an island called the Isla de Queimada Grande. Thank you. But it goes by another name too, Snake Island. It's a rocky, mountainous, tree-filled island that no humans are allowed to enter because it's the home of the golden lancehead viper. It's the only place on Earth where this snake lives. And there's not that many around the planet, but here, they're so concentrated, it seems like it's ruled by the beasts. The golden lancehead, it was pushed there after rising sea levels forced it to move, and it feasts on two species of bird that only live on the island as well. And on there, it slithers up the trees, crawls along the mountains, wriggles along the ground, and it only lives that there are around 4,000 of these dangerous vipers there. And because the snake is so rare, it's critically endangered, the Brazilian president has banned people from going, which is sensible. It's nice to give these deadly snakes some space to live. It's smart, really. I don't know why anyone would want to go. Because the golden lancehead viper, yeah, it only eats birds, but its venom can melt human skin. We'll get one of your sciencey questions answered by our expert Tom in just a sec. First, let's head into the world of microbiology with our germ buddies Benny and Mao. They're teaching us exactly what happens with what goes in your body, where it ends up, what's good, what's bad, and today, what stinks.
Good Bugs, Bad Bugs, with support from the Society for General Microbiology.
Microbes get everywhere. They're on us, in us, and around us. If you've got a microscope, like me, you can see them for yourself. Look!
All right, there.
That's Benny. He's a helpful sort of microbe. Lots of microbes are.
Not you again. Can't you leave us in peace?
And that's Mal. He's not very nice. A few microbes are horrible, and they're called germs.
Charming. I'm not all that keen on you either.
Hey, easy, Mal, mate. You're not doing yourself any favours there.
So, what's up, guys?
I thought it might be cool to look at another surprising way that microorganisms can be helpful to humans.
I'm a germ. I'm not helpful.
OK, germs are microbes and they can make you poorly. That's right. But look, mate, if there was a big party with all the microbes, well, you and your germy mates would be stuck in a corner all on your own. Less than 5% of microbes are harmful.
I hate parties.
Most of us don't bother humans, and some even help. They help make some foods tasty.
And Benny's do-gooder microbe mates in your gut help digest it. Ooh, we're so helpful breaking down a variety of foodstuffs into nutrients that are easy for the human body to absorb. Gets right on my wick.
Yes, you said so before.
But this is the cool, surprising bit. You're going to like this. After that food's been digested, you get waste, don't you?
Poo! Lovely, smelly, mucky old poo! Thanks to microbes, and the poo goes down the toilet through the sewers and into the massive tanks to be treated.
You'll never guess who helps clear up the waste, though. Go on, guess.
I don't want to guess.
Go on, just have a little try. Who helps make the waste safe for the environment? He'll never get it.
Microbes.
He'll never get it. Oh, you did. Yes, microbes. Too many clues, I can see that now. Anyway, I think that's quite nice. You see, if there is a mess, microbes roll up their sleeves and pitch in to sort it out. Consider it.
All us microbes know that, Benny. So first the sewage is sieved to remove solid bits and bobs like tissues and toothbrushes and all the gritty bits. I wonder who ate a toothbrush. Bet it tasted horrible.
Well, waste isn't just poo, is it, mate? Sewers collect all sorts of watery waste, everything from rainwater in the gutters to washing machine water, all down the drain from where it ends up at the sewage works. Mal? Mal? It seems Mal has nodded off. Best let him sleep for a bit. He's very grumpy when woken up. Well, even more grumpy than usual. See you in a bit.
Follow the adventures of Benny and Mal on funkidslive.com/bugs. Good Bug, Bad Bug, produced with support from the Society for General Microbiology.
We've got loads more Benny and Mal adventures that you can catch up on for free on your phone or tablet. Get to iTunes, get to the Fun Kids app, and you can have a listen at funkidslive.com. Now, here's the thing. You know, in school, your mates, they can sometimes... Well, I don't want to say lie, because that's a bit mean and nasty, but they can be... Let's say playful with the truth, right? And sometimes they tell you something that they think is true, but it goes into your head and yeah, you're a bit wondering, aren't you? You know instantly that's a massive lie. Something smells not too clever about it, right? Well, if it's to do with science, let me know and I'll figure out if it's true or if it's false for you, right? Every week, I have a look at the science questions that you send over to my page at funkidslive.com and we ask our expert, Tom. Right, this week's question, Tom, comes from Connor, who is 8, who asks, what are clouds made of?
Well, clouds are made of water molecules. It's water vapour. So water has its own life cycle around the Earth. So it starts off in the oceans. When the oceans heat up, it evaporates into clouds. These clouds move around the Earth, and when they get to a certain height or a certain density where they can't hold all this water molecules, then it rains. If it rains in the ocean, then it's back to there. But if it rains over land, then what happens is it finds its way back to the ocean, which is why we have these rivers and streams.
So the clouds are seawater evaporating into gas. It gets so high until it can't be a gas anymore because it's so cold. Then it becomes water. Why does it stick together like that so much? And why do the clouds not drop down to the Earth?
So the reason they don't drop down to the Earth is because they have a lower density than the rest of the air. The reason they stick together is because water molecules like to be together, and that's their lowest energy state and where they fit together best. The reason we can see the clouds and they don't just look like how we sometimes see steam, because you're actually seeing it condensing, is because it does collect dust, and that's a lot of what we see as clouds.
And then why does it rain? Why do these clouds decide they've had enough and they break open?
In the same way that water on a cold day, if you look at the windows, it forms water droplets, so that's from the air. In that same way, if it gets too cold, then water condenses and goes back down to the Earth.
It is time for the smartest and the silliest bits of science in the news this week. A plant which NASA has proved can cure snoring is now for sale in supermarkets all around the country. It's a pineapple plant. It's grown in the Netherlands. And apparently it helps improve the air quality in the atmosphere in the room that you sleep. So it's only £12 as well. That's really cheap to stop your dad burbling away like a drowning hippo all night. Also, Australian scientists, they hope the giant Triton snail will help save the Great Barrier Reef. Because over the past 30 years, the reef has lost half of its coral. Much of this is due to a starfish that eats it. But scientists have been breeding these snails in captivity because they'll go in the ocean, then hunt the starfish. And finally, you can help NASA nickname a remote space object. Because very soon a spacecraft will fly through territory a billion miles away. And in 2019, it'll travel past the most remote thing we've ever discovered in space. So far, they've called it the 486-958 2014 MU69. Not that catchy a name. Scientists want you to come up with something better. You can name this remote distant flying object. We've actually got something to help you out with that over at funkidslive.com. And it's time to catch up with your favourite genius now. It's Professor Hallux. Today he's finding out what's going on in your ticker.
Professor Hallux's heartbeat.
How's body doing, Professor?
Absolutely and thoroughly heartless.
Oh, don't be mean. He's far from heartless. He's a caring, sensitive soul.
No. I mean, he's literally heartless. His old one broke, so we're going to have to make him a new one.
Oh, that's a pain. Is he okay?
He's not happy, as I've had to rig him up to the toaster to keep him going until his new heart is ready. It makes him jump to his feet every 60 seconds.
Not good. We'd better get a move on then. Lab coat's on. So what do we know about the heart, Professor?
Well, your heart is one of the most important organs in your body. It's about the size of a fist and is well protected by the ribcage. It's made of some of the cleverest muscles in your body. Cardiac muscles. It's tough stuff. Check it out.
Cardiac muscle is very hard working. This muscle contracts.
That means squeezes.
And relaxes.
That means, well, relax. Oh, that's obvious, I guess. That contracting and relaxing pushes blood all around your body.
But the nutty thing is that the cells in your cardiac muscle are programmed to do this contracting and relaxing all by themselves, over and over again, without you ever thinking about it.
Wow, look at this, nurse. It says that over the average lifespan, a human heart will beat over 2.5 billion times. If you could add up the power in all those beats, it would be enough to lift a battleship. Pardon me? Right, we've got the muscle. What's inside?
Inside the heart, there are four chambers.
A chamber is just like a room or a space. Four spaces, basically. Two on the bottom, two on the top.
The chambers on the bottom are called the ventricles. Their job is to push blood around the body. The two chambers on top are called the atria. These chambers fill with the blood returning from the heart from around the body. And running down the middle of the heart is a thick wall of muscle called the septum, which separates the left and right side of the heart.
Brilliantly informative, nurse. Of course things can go wrong with the heart.
Uh-oh.
Sometimes there are holes between the chambers of the heart. If you've ever had a hole in your bike tyre or in a bottle of water, you'll know holes can stop things from doing their job properly. Holes in the heart cause problems like blood travelling in the wrong direction. These holes shouldn't be there, but some people are born like this. When someone's born with a condition, it's called congenital. So these holes are known as a congenital heart condition.
Some holes are tiny and are left alone. Others are much bigger, and operations can help to close them to help the heart do its job. Holes in the heart are the most common heart problem that affects children. So maybe you know someone who is affected.
Thanks, nurse. Now Body is lucky because we can make him a new heart in our laboratory. It's not quite as easy to replace human hearts. So here's a tip. Make sure you keep your ticker in top shape.
Ticker tip.
Today's ticker tip is exercise. People who get some exercise every single day are less likely to have problems with their heart in later life. It doesn't have to be a marathon, just something that will get your heart beating faster so you will feel warm and a little bit out of breath.
Remember, your heart is a muscle and the more it works, the stronger it will get. Plus, exercise offers all sorts of benefits which can prevent heart disease.
Maybe you already play a sport, or swim, or cycle. If you don't, well, think about your week and what small changes you can make so that you're being more active. Climb the stairs instead of getting the lift. Walk instead of taking the bus.
Even dancing is exercise. Get some music on and have a boogie. See you soon.
Professor Hallux's Heartbeat. Funded thanks to a Heart Research UK Healthy Heart Grant. Find out more and get hands-on at funkidslive.com/Hallux.
We've got loads more Professor Hallux adventures that you can catch up on for free. Get to iTunes, get to the Fun Kids app and have a listen at funkidslive.com. Right, that is it for another mind-blowing, jaw-dropping and no doubt award-winning episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. We're back really soon with more amazing, dangerous and deadly things from the universe all around us. Remember, if you want to shout out on the show, the easiest way is to send a message over to my page at funkidslive.com, and it will be really helpful as well if I know that you're listening and I know that you're loving it by getting on the iTunes podcast store, finding the Fun Kids Science Weekly and leaving us a 5-star review with your name on there as well. Now you can catch up on all of our brilliant science series over at funkidslive.com. We're on iTunes and also on the free Fun Kids app, and that Fun Kids app is a brilliant way to listen to Fun Kids all day, all week. You can get us on there, you can get us on your DAB digital radio all over the country, and have a listen at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.